Hey, Spittin' Chiclets listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Experience your drives in 10K with the all-new QI10 Max driver from our friends at TaylorMade. QI10 Max is the most forgiving driver TaylorMade has ever made, with 10K MOI for maximum stability and forgiveness at impact. More forgiveness means more long and straight drives, even on off-center strikes. The days of missing the fairway are numbered. Shop QI10 Max, QI10, and QI10 LS drivers, plus schedule a custom fitting at TaylorMadeGolf.com.
This episode is brought to you by Body Armor Zero Sugar. The brand new Zero Sugar sports drink from our friends at Body Armor provides real hydration with no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes. And whether you're looking to stay hydrated or recovering from a long weekend, Body Armor Zero Sugar has got you covered with great tasting flavors like Fruit Punch and Lemon Lime. Available in stores nationwide, head on over to Body Armor Store on Amazon and get yours today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 443 of Spittin' Chiclets, presented by Pink Whitney, from our friends at New Amsterdam Vodka, here in the Barstool Sports podcast family. We're knee-deep into the second round, guaranteed at least two game sixes. We got a city on edge up north. Some, frankly, wild shit going on this round, but let's check in with the fellas. First, the merman, Matt Murley. What's going on, big guy?
Not much. I'm happy we're doing an early recording today. It's only 10 p.m. over here. It's not 4 a.m. So I got a little juice. I'm ready.
Burr, you able to stay up tonight, or tonight maybe a dirt watch the games tomorrow day?
Yeah, I've said it. I was going to go to bed, but I figured we're going to do this for a couple hours. Then I'm going to tune into Biz on TNT, and he's going to get me all juiced up. Then I'll fall into that first period, and I'll probably be up.
Then if you win one bet, next goal, you're in.
Yeah, that's what I was saying to G earlier. It's like a casino. Like you can't sleep. You don't even get tired.
Except there's no oxygen being pumped into your apartment.
You have a nice glow on. I saw a video you posted. The weather looks tremendous over there.
Yeah, the weather's turned. It's been perfect weather. It's the perfect heat where you're not sweating through everything, but it's still warm.
And the bars are probably full, because the minute it turns there, I feel like everybody is just the happiest person on the planet.
Yeah, they always build out these huge patios. They take them down in the winter, then they build them all out for the spring. So everybody's just on the patios drinking the $10 draft beers. It's a time. I don't get down there much anymore with the wife and kid, but it's a good time.
Why'd you say $10 draft beer? Is that expensive? Are they trying to gouge you because of you can enjoy it in the sun?
No, it's always expensive liquor over here. The government controls it all. So it's very expensive. It's basically what I call it. It's like you pay for your taxes. It's your health care. You get free education, all this stuff. But your booze is really expensive. More than Canada.
You're providing health care for the whole block where you're living.
Stockholm's taken care of because of the mermaid.
You're basically a surgeon.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're a brain surgeon. That's how much you're contributing.
And I go for the cheap beer over here. I go for the cheapest one, like the they don't have Big Deal Brewer. I would be going that, but they got a Falcon, it's called. It's just a local, like, cheapest one you got.
Oh, I remember Falcon.
It's still 10 bucks.
The big cans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got to go tall boys. Always go tall boys.
I love, too, that. I asked Murray, or he explained to me, basically, you live two different lives. Like, the winter, everyone just hunkers down, and you just understand, like, this is it. We got 6-7 months of straight-up winter, and then the summer, all anyone does is spend the entire day outside. They're drinking, they're fishing, they're golfing. I'm like, so what do they do in the winter? He's like, they really drink.
Okay. So, Murray, I don't want to get you in trouble, but in Vancouver, the minute it turns, because usually winter, it's all rainy, but the minute it's sunny out, like, you see these beautiful women walking the streets. Is it similar there, where, like, girls in bikini tops? And
yeah, not so much bikini tops, but they're in the dresses. And I remember when I was first over here years ago, my couple buddies came over, and they would just sit in the square on the bench for hours. They're like, this is fantasy land, they called it. It was just sitting there watching them back and forth.
El Creepo.
Blonde rocket, blonde rocket, yeah. Blonde rocket, brunette. Blonde rocket. Blonde.
They have the scorecards for, like, the dunk contest.
Paul, Biz Nasty, Bissonette. I just left you yesterday sometime down in Atlanta. Great time. We'll get to that shortly. But do you get excited, more nervous doing this before a show? Or does this kind of calm you down before going on TV? What's that? What are you feeling right now?
I don't think we've ever recorded before I've went on. So, I mean, you could judge by the performance tonight when I'm fumble fucking my words and I can't put together my thoughts. But no, it actually kind of gets me in the mode. You know, I know tonight we have Carolina, New Jersey, which will be an interesting game. Hopefully New Jersey can at least extend things, because the way that Carolina played last game and the way that they play at home, I don't really like New Jersey's chances, especially if they don't start Schmid. Because I think they went to Vanacek in that game. But overall, buddy, just pump my Leafs are alive. I thought they played the best 60-minute game they have all playoffs. And chip in a chair, as they say. You said one Northern team that's a little bit off their rocker right now, but I feel like both Canadian teams right now are off their rocker, especially with what happened in game 4 in Edmonton.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's all knotted up. I would think Toronto's way more on edge than Edmonton right now, no?
Oh, I just meant more so because of the slash to their golden boy's wrist and just
okay,
the amount of attention online this has gotten, and people, Petrangelo is going to have to go in a witness protection program now.
Yeah, that was some ugly.
He's gonna have wit coming at him, for crying out loud. I saw all the rant and raving you were doing on the Twitter machine last night.
It's a goon squad, that whole Vegas team. All you've been telling me is these are the choir boys. These are the mean and clean guys. These are the stay out of the box guys. They have about 150 penalty minutes in the two games they've lost this period. They tried to break a guy's wrist. Our golden child, our number two, but he's really everyone else's number 1A if they could ever touch him. It was disgusting, and that the decision from the Department of Player Safety hasn't come out yet. If he doesn't get more games than Darnell Nurse got for a fair, even, square off fight, then I don't know what fucking league we're watching and covering anymore. So hello, nice seeing you guys, and yeah, for anyone who's a little confused, so we're going to be able to go over what's happened the past few days, and then we're going to hop on after the games tonight. So we'll be able to cover Game 5 Carolina, or Game 5, and then we'll be able to cover Game 5 Dallas Seattle. But we're just trying to get through most of the pod, you know, before 1 a.m. So
yeah, and you guys didn't want to have to wait for me, and we get Merle's on here. So it just made sense, especially with the amount of drama that's happened over the past few days, and then we could just recap those Game 5. So we thought that made the most sense. So thank you to Whit for clarifying.
Yeah, and actually, I guess in a funny way, to describe the games that are about to play tonight, Carolina, Jersey, Seattle, Dallas, it'll be just an old school Chicklets episode, Whit and RA. It'll be just us. Who knows where that'll lead? I mean, I don't really even want to begin to think what we'll be talking about, but we'll be back. We'll be back.
We should go knock at 19 Colebrook, Whit, see if they'll let us sit in the couch for a couple hours.
I love that place.
The show there.
He's like, hey, I'll show you my man cave. Like, okay. And I go downstairs to his basement. He opens the door. I was like, poof. I was like, oh my God, are you growing weed in here? He's like, no, I just sit down here and burn. The TV was like 90 inches, about 3 feet away from him. I was like, this is a man cave, dude.
He's the guy who sits front row at the cinema like this.
Yeah, hey, tough to get a man cave in the city, though. And that was a pretty sick room, to be honest.
Oh, it was. Yeah,
that's what happens. You don't have kids, man. Just make a man cave out of the kids' bedrooms. But Whit, that's actually a nice little segue to our guest. We're not going to spoil any stories, but if you haven't heard on our social media, we interviewed Charles Barkley on Monday. We're going to be dropping it next week. I mean, we're not going to get into it, but guys, that was incredible. I was giddy the whole time. This is going to be probably a top 3 to 5 interview easily, right, Biz?
Oh, yeah. And he was so generous with the time that he gave us. We sat down for just under 2 hours. So we couldn't be more grateful. We appreciate Chuck. Just one absolute one of a kind personality. And we shared a lot of laughs. Let's just put it that way. So looking forward to you guys hearing that. We didn't really talk too much hockey. I was just more interested in about his career and all the things that he's accomplished and done. Like, we're talking like multiple SNLs, played on the Dream Team, Hall of Fame career, his television career, which I hadn't even realized was 23 years. I mean, time goes fast. And I, once again, just a one of a kind personality from Alabama, who's an extremely grateful person for where life has brought him. And we had the pleasure of sitting down with him, and I'm excited for you Spit and Chicklets fans to hear it. RA, we did talk about that. They did an ad campaign, I'm Not Your Role Model, which was a huge at the time. And probably even more so than I know, because I wasn't really, you know, I wasn't probably smart enough to understand how it was more of a, you know, him trying to reach through to all these younger kids about not looking up to athletes, but more so doctors and teachers and what have it. But you ended up writing a paper on it.
Yeah.
When you were in what, college?
I was a very mature freshman at North Adams. That's a way of saying I was a 21-year-old freshman at college. And
what did you do the 3 years after high school?
He dedicated his life to proms.
Proms and spring breaks. I could stay away from my daughter.
So were you working or were you just like partying? What?
1991, I went to Northeast until April and I wasn't having a good time. I was fucking taking the orange line to college. I'm like, I grew up on Animal House and Revenge of the Nerds. This isn't fucking college. I was a commuter. So I took a year and a half maybe off. North Adams wouldn't take my transfer credit. So I waited, applied as a freshman. They took me and then I just worked, you know, crumb bum jobs in the interim and went in town and fucking chased bras around for a couple of years. Then did a few more years up North Adams, chased a few more around up there. So I did. I matriculated totally for like 4.5 years, but I graduated high school in 90 and then college in 97. So the old
blue. A lot of people go to college for 7 years.
You basically are a doctor.
They're called might as well join the
much
fucking
like Merle's.
Peace.
We have a brain surgeon in one corner here on the Zoom, and then we have another doctor on the bottom right.
And we now, have RA, a hitman if Petriangelo doesn't get a 2 or 3 game suspension in the bottom left. And that's the wit dog.
The last thing
on Barkley that cracked me up, because it wasn't in the interview, it was after, we just said, we're like, hey, we have to show you RA here shooting hoops. This guy is something else. And I think he was like, oh, man, this guy must have like a wet J. And we showed him it, and he motherfucker, what the fuck?
Hey, why don't we insert that video right now, and we'll play that right now.
So this is RA playing basketball. We want you to grade his shot.
It was raining, Charles.
Oh, my God.
It's terrible.
It's not supposed to be out. It's supposed to go up.
You haven't shoot it well. Oh, no, basketball. No. Okay.
Wait, this is the best one. Go to the free throw line.
You couldn't even get it there.
The kid goes, you all right?
Wait, did you say that was better?
Oh.
What the fuck? Oh, the ball's wet? Oh, yeah, that's not an excuse.
That's not it.
I think he does end up hitting one.
Nah.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
I know.
Don't quit your day job.
No, I ain't gonna.
So, Sir Charles, I mean, I think it was, I guess he's boys with Shaq, so he's seen his free throw through shooting. Oh, the other thing that was hilarious, so we interviewed Charles Tuesday, and then that night, or last night, did you see him and Shaq, like, crying, laughing? They couldn't even talk because they were laughing
at AD?
Yeah, yeah. Anthony Davis leaving the court in a wheelchair. And they couldn't even form a sentence. I remember Paul Pierce left the court in a wheelchair, and then he came back to the game.
Yeah.
Charles, oh, go ahead, sorry.
Well, no, he was complimenting the kid from, because it was a kid from Winnipeg, and somebody else got hit with a massive amount of stitches, too. And he said if that happened to a basketball player, he'd retire. Like, and it's true.
Biz, were we going to ask me a second ago?
Well, I was going to say, how did you do on the paper?
I think I got like an A-. It was, you know, the real like fresh intro to write in freshman class. It wasn't like a tough one, but I'm going to actually see if I could dig it out, because we had to save all our papers for like senior seminar bullshit. So I might actually have it. I'll have to take a look at my stash. It's not at this address, though.
Would have been a straight A if there wasn't a hole from the roach that he was smoking while he wrote it in the top left.
I actually had like a 3.75 or something after like 2 years, because I was on the school paper.
That's great.
Yeah, I was editor of the school paper by like my sophomore year. I just kind of like fell into it and had a knack for it. And then after that, I used up too many credits, so then I could only take so many classes after that. I had the worst fucking schedules for 2 years. I like C's and D's get degrees. That was my motto for the last 2 years.
I'm hoping that you could pull it up so our fans could read like what you thought about it at the time. What was your creative process? How would you sit down and write? Would you always smoke or would you stay sober?
You know what? That's funny. The first semester, I wasn't quite the stoner. Actually, that first semester, that's when I became like a regular smoker. I would smoke occasionally back in Chucktown, but up there is when I became like a regular user of the cannabis. And it just mellowed me out. It chilled me out. It's better than fucking Klonopin or all the other shit they put you on. And I may or may not have smoked for that. I dove right in and said, no, fucking, he plays sports for a living. You shouldn't be having to raise your kids, man. Of course, he's not a fucking role model. The other thing, too, Biz, he's a head taller than me, right? In that pitch, he's 6'6". Only 19 fucking guys in NBA history have more rebounds than that guy. He's 6'6". Everyone else is like 6'8", 6'9", 7 foot tall. That's even more impressive when you stand next to the guy. And like, this guy averaged 11.7 fucking rebounds a game over 16 years. And he's
6'6". Kind of a cool story how he told us. The coach was like, do you know how many rebounds you get every game? And he didn't even know. He's like, yeah, 11 or 12. And the guy's like, do you understand like how rare that is? And he had no idea. So we won't spoil anything, but it was a lot of fun chat with him. Just a super friendly guy. And what a crazy life.
Yeah, I was having major FOMO. You guys were down there with him. So I actually was watching you, Biz, on his Steam Room podcast today. And you guys' rapport was awesome. Like, he really liked you, and it was really a fun episode to watch. I'm really excited for
that. Call
me
Sticks.
Big one.
I thought of you during it because he actually used your line. I was like, does he know Merle's? I don't remember how it came up. He goes, I like to drink and I like to gamble. That was the sentence. I'm like, that's the
Mark. We're in a group on MySpace.
Hey, don't take my buddy.
He's going to friend steal him.
I'm like, Merle's, what the hell are you doing here in the lobby of the Four Seasons? He's like, oh, I live with Chuck now. All we do is drink and gamble.
Shit. Before we get to the hockey, couple notes. You guys got a sandbagger dropping soon, correct? The Mundo versus Portnoy and Richards.
Holy shit. I watched this the other night. It is the most outrageous hour of golf on YouTube that's ever been created. I mean, Dave Portnoy was the most miserable prick you've ever seen in your life, and it was pure entertainment. I sent you guys the one clip where I think he says cunt 43 times in like a 10-second span, just slashing it around the bunker. Can't give anything away. What a match. What a horrible, horrible, like maybe the worst golf ever played on the internet, but it was competitive.
So yeah, it was.
I can't wait. It'll be Wednesday for everyone. And so check that out. Josh Richards is a great kid too. Little stallion.
Oh, yeah. Awesome kid. Awesome kid. He's tiny though. I didn't realize how small he was. He's got to weigh $150, $160?
I don't even know if that. Remember we did the quad.
Nothing wrong with weighing $150 or $150.
That's true. I thought he was going to blow away given the wind that we had on the golf course that day. Worst conditions I've ever golfed in. It was a miserable day for me, but not as much as Dave Portnoy. So it actually made me happy.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Brunelli, I saw you got a haircut. You look like Demi Moore.
Let's see.
It's a tough one, boys.
Let's see it.
So my sideburns are gone.
Oh,
I have
Jesus.
No sideburns. My hair is it's
why
a tough
did you
haircut.
Why I thought you were all about the flow, like what,
honestly, boys, I had just one of those moments where it was like I gotta grow up. I just looked myself in the mirror, was like, this hair, I just gotta grow up. I'm sick of going out with a hat on. And how this guy cut my hair was insane. First off, what an idiot move for not going to Sport Clips, the best place to get a haircut in the league. But the guy would tie my hair in a knot and then take a single razor and just slice the knot. I've never gotten my hair cut like that. Yeah,
Go to Rikers.
The haircut cost. I mean, it took about 8 minutes total. I had a ton of hair gone, and now I have no sideburns. So,
Side looks like the sideburns are somewhat there, and the other one looks like they're higher up. What a fucking amateur job!
Oh my god, yeah, like, and it's like shaved where the sideburn was on the right side. Oh, that's a butcher job.
It's wow.
You're Demi Moore.
Did you go to Hank's guy?
No, I got. He still won't tell me. He won't. I've seen him, I've seen him out in the city like two or three times after that, and he's like, I'm still not telling you.
Well, I mean, you live in New York City. I think it would be a wise investment to hire a private investigator and just have him follow him to where he goes and then just start copying his cuts.
I think I'll just stick with Sport Clips. I think that's the...
Maybe Sport that's where he goes. Maybe that's where Hank goes.
I wouldn't shock me one bit.
All right.
R.I.P. Grinnelli sideburns.
Yeah.
They're gone.
Might have long gone.
You knew he was doing something deranged once the Bruins lost. It took a little while, it took a couple of weeks, but he cut his hair. And now look at this guy down the bottom. He's done deranged.
Right. If I remember Panthers correctly, nobody in the internet community of Chicklets was harder on Grinnelli for partying with the Blues after they beat the Bruins for the cup. You went ham on him. And Whoa. You've been wearing Panthers merch since game 7 ended.
He's got seasons now.
You were on Barstool Radio going at him, I remember.
I gave him once, dude.
I would say RA was number two behind Portnoy, but RA, you gave it to me about that. You were giving. They brought you guys on to defend me, and you were like, "I'm not defending him. He's an idiot."
Where do the other two rank on busted your chops about it?
They were up there. They weren't as high as you, though.
No numbers, though. Okay.
I've just seen Panthers hats, Panthers shirts, Panthers underwear.
You could tell it's the old logo at Reebok. I mean, this shirt's probably older than the friggin'.
Anyways, me and Murley's, or my rookie year was after Murley's. That was the rookie year shirts we got. They were the workout comfy shirts. I remember that.
Yeah. So we didn't get shirts in Pittsburgh. Do you remember the workout stuff? Remember it was over in those drawers? It was the old gray shorts and a plain black t-shirt that like Shel Samuelson wore back there in the cup runs.
Shel Samuelson.
It was pathetic. We didn't get anything team issued. We were bankrupt.
Yeah, what was the blue Gitch? That was like the iconic one.
Oh, the Oilers still have those, I think. Those are legendary. Yeah. Everybody wants those. Pat Maroon has one on still, too, I see.
Did you guys see that tweet? I sent to the big group, and it was online. They had the list of all the Penguins prospects when Sid joined the team. You four were on it. You three were on it. And Colby Armstrong, too. It sounds like it was the top 20. Like, RA, what were you, number 21? Like, I was the only one on the show who was on the fucking list. It was
Did you see who was last
there
on that list? No. Matt Molson.
Yeah.
Shit. He was in
and
the
he probably, I mean, the list was Fleury, Malkin, myself. I would say after Fleury and Malkin, like, did anyone on that list have a better career than Matt Molson? Maybe Goligoski was probably on there at that point. I'd have to go through and look, but I texted him. I go, because he's a scout. I go, scouts don't know shit. He's like, sometimes we do. But he was way down there. And what a run he had.
Basically, it was in the context of this analytic guy online. What's his name? Jay Fresh?
I think so, yeah.
He was the one who posted it saying like, oh, yeah, you guys think that Crosby had a lot to work with when he stepped in the league, much like Bedard. So it was a ricochet shot for us. But, hey, it was just it was pleasure to being nominated.
Well, that's what happened. Bieksa said it on Sportsnet. He chirped Army. He's like, what did he have? Army and Talbot? So then I fired back. Not that he saw it or anything, but I was like, what do you mean? Like when Crosby came, we had LeClaire, Recchi, Palfi, Lemieux, and the Wit. So, and then I think that guy saw that and he put out the list of prospects.
I still love thinking back to lockout year playing Manitoba Moose and just seeing that this rookie defenseman was getting a lot of points. I'm like, Bowling Green, he's a little undersized. I'm like, who is this guy? And then he beat the piss out of somebody. I was like, what the hell? It was fucking Bieksa. I can't say his name. Bieksa. That's why I was like, Merle's is going at him on Twitter. He wouldn't say a word to him to his face.
Oh, no, I remember. I was like ready to go him up in Manitoba one time, and he looked at me, and I could just tell. I think I've told that story on here. I just could see in his eyes, I'm like, nope.
No, that's like, not. Yeah, nope. Army didn't have that in him. He didn't have that radar where he could detect if a guy would beat the wheels off him. But you had it built in.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And I talked to Army about it on Game Notes. He's like, no, he's just messing with me. We're buddies. He's like, it was a clean shot. He goes, Talbot was the real ricochet shot. Like, no reason to bring him into it.
He's the only reason they have
two goals,
a fucking
game
cup.
Seven to win the cup.
Exactly.
Albie.
Well, boys, you want to get into it?
Absolutely. It's funny you mentioned fancy stats. I actually put a couple in this week's Outline Biz, believe it or not. We'll get to them in a little bit. But big news out of Philly. Friend of the program, Keith Jones, has been named president of hockey operations. Daniel Brea got the GM job. No surprise there. Earlier on Wednesday, there were reports it was down to Jonesy and Edzo. I think a lot of people are kind of surprised. Two guys in media. Edzo hasn't been in a front office for a while. I don't think Jonesy ever has. And then later, Chris Therrien broke that it was going to be Jonesy getting the job. So congrats to Jonesy, man. Let me go to you first. If you took over the presidency of the Flyers, what would be your first move to make? You already got a GM there. Like, would you move the coach, players? What would you do?
Sign Hazy to another extension.
I think I'd move the team.
He would just troll the fans every night on Twitter.
Just get him right down south. Get another market down south. I don't know. That's kind of a loaded question. I'd have to think about a little bit. But I'm so happy for Keith Jones. And now the first time I actually got to meet him, I've always been a big fan of watching his TV career. I think he's so good between the benches or the color guy for all the Flyers games. And then when we got to go to his house, he had the donkey farm. He had the beautiful piece of property. It's about 45, 50 minutes from Philly. Had one of my most enjoyable interviews we've ever done.
Oh.
I feel like we could have done 9 hours with him. We still have to do round two. I think maybe he'll give us another shot. Just a legendary memory and a great storyteller. And I love this move because he's such a people person, right? He knows exactly, not only does he know what it takes to play at a high level and to kind of understand, he understands what being a good teammate is, because that's really how his whole career was. He was somebody who every team wanted around. They wanted him around in the room. And he'll look at this entire thing like, all right, I have Dan Briere, who lost the interim tag, so he's now the head GM. And he'll be making the hockey decisions, I believe. I think it's not necessarily fair if a president hires a GM and then he's always given his input. It's almost like, all right, here's your job, now go run with it. But Jonesy's the guy that he's speaking to fans, right? He's the face of the franchise in a sense of when he's talking to media, talking to fans, talking to season ticket holders, things like that that happen throughout the year, the perfect man for the job. So his career in hockey, his career in broadcasting, seeing every aspect of the game, I think it's just the perfect hire because he's been in Philly. He loved playing for the Flyers. I mean, if you guys remember from the interview, the way he retired when Bobby Clark goes, Jonesy's done. the guy's seen it all. And I think that it's a great hire just because of how much pride he has in that organization. He wants to get them good again. And I totally disagree with the people saying like, oh, he's never done this. You're hiring a guy from the media. It's like, you know, he knows hockey. He's the hockey lifer. You know, and once you're able to get above, it's leadership qualities, right? You're able to lead from the top and be a guy who knows how to treat people the right way, who knows how to talk to prospects, who knows how to talk to veterans. And because of that, I think he'll do a phenomenal job.
Well, and he's had his eyes on the organization for so long, especially working in media. And I'm sure with some of the things that haven't gone right, you know, other people maybe come to him and talk about the things that aren't going right. So as far as information about where things should go from here and things that they haven't been able to address, he's the right guy for the job. And the way that he's going to be able to speak to the fans and communicate that, like, you know, they have hardcore fans. They need to know what's going on a constant basis. And you need a guy who they can relate to, who can update them on all that stuff. Ari, I would say the biggest thing, and he's already started well, obviously with Briere being in the mix, is going to be a round table. Like, what other guys in the organization are going to be involved as far as like making hockey decisions? Because like, it shouldn't just fall on a guy like Briere. Like, you need multiple guys, like 7, 8, 9 different guys at a round table telling you about, you know, what direction should we go with prospects? What direction should we go with free agency? Those guys like digging into like, you know, will those guys fit in well here? Like, what's their character like? So all that weighing on one or two guys' shoulders is very difficult. I would imagine Jonesy, being the teammate that he is, surrounds himself with other great guys who can make the right decisions to get this organization in the right place.
I saw Saravelli on Twitter, Biz.
Yeah.
And he mentioned that Tortorella is going to have a major say in everything, which I don't necessarily know how that's going to go. But obviously there's a trust factor between those guys. Frank's very dialed into the Flyers. That's his home base, right? So I think because of that, you'll see that it is a group decision on a lot of things, with Torts having a big say in not only who's playing on the ice, but who's getting called up and things like that.
It's the age old story of they're constantly bitching in the media about recycling guys who have already been in the role. And then the minute you get a new one, it's like, oh, he has no experience. It's like, he's a smart enough guy to siphon through this stuff and get other people's opinions, where he's not just going to fucking go and do things on his own, where maybe they've had guys there in the past who are a little bit stubborn and letting people on that inner circle. So overall, I think it's a great hire. I think he's going to crush it. And I think that between him and Briere, and even with the Tort situation and letting his opinion be heard, if it's a ridiculous opinion, I'm sure they're both going to collectively be like, no, we're not going in that direction. Because at the end of the day, what does Torts have? 3 years left on his deal now? And the organization has enough money where if they don't like what they're seeing at a certain point, they're going to be okay saying, all right, we're ready to part ways with this guy and go in a different direction. But I feel like the hire of Jonesy will almost like calm Torts down, where they can work together and figure out the direction of the group.
To answer your question, I guess without being super specific in terms of what I would do with the Flyers, they have been the poster boys of being stuck in the middle, of being barely, you know, they had a couple runs a while back, but they've been never had the high pick. It seems like they got, you know, Nolan Patrick. That was really tough for him, right? That didn't work out. And then never making any noise in the playoffs. I would say, and Jonesy, I'm sure, is well aware, like, we have to suck. We have to suck. We got to be a shitty team that has some prospects that are learning and maybe playing more minutes than they would be on a good team. But overall, their goal next year, suck. That's how you're going to get good. That's it. There's no other way around it now.
If they did fire Torts, Biz, all they got to do is just raise everybody's fucking cable bill for the next year. That'll fucking pay for it. That's all they do anyways. And yeah, the job, I think a lot of it is delegating and leading. It's like, you know, making decisions where they need to be made. I think it's putting the right people in position. And dude, Jonesy's a snake until you make it kind of guy, I think, who always kind of finds the angle and makes it where he needs to go. So I think he's going to do a good job as well. And I hope he hires Al Morganti as his consigliere. That would be a pretty good call to have Al everywhere he goes on his right-hand side. Those two are like frickin' frack. They're always hanging out. So
Liam McHugh described it the best. He's like a hockey's version of Forrest Gump. Like, you just hear about all these wild stories. Like, even I think Liam McHugh was saying when the Holyfield got his ear bit by Tyson, I don't think a couple of days before Jonesy had any idea he was going to the fight, but somehow ended up on like Trump's PJ, went down to the fight, and then Mike Tyson's biting Holyfield's ear off. And he just seems to find himself in these ridiculous, crazy situations. But I couldn't be happier for the guy because he's such an amazing person. We're going to miss him at TNT. And I was actually hoping that when I heard that it was him and Edzo, I'm like, oh, maybe they do like a co-president, like co-president job where they're both still involved together and they get to tackle it together. But
like stepbrothers?
Yeah, like stepbrothers style.
They're up in the treehouse.
Plotting trades.
Are you looking for relief, relaxation, or to party on the motherfucking moon? Then check out 3Chi's new True Strains lineup of cannabis vapes and gummies tailored for specific effects. And the best part? It's delivered straight to your door. Visit 3Chi.com. That's 3CHI.com. And for a limited time, get 20% off with the code BARSTOOL20.
All right, Biz, we're going to move over to the series now. And Edmonton, they were in danger of falling into a 3-1 hole against a very stout Vegas squad. But Stu Skinnerman played unbelievable, answered the bell. Huge 4-1 game 4 victory to tie the series. We're going to get at least 6 games out of this one. Skinner had 25 saves on 26 shots for his 5th postseason win. Aiden Hill was the starter for Vegas. Played all right, but not up to snuff with Skinner. Whitdog, what did you see here? Are you impressed? Are you confident? What are your thoughts on Edmonton right now?
Beyond impressed. And this team has shown a crazy ability to bounce back. You go back to mid-February. Besides yours truly turning 40, you know what else happened? Or the last thing that happened mid-February? Oilers lost 2 games in a row. That's how good this team is coming off a loss. They have so much pride. They have so much belief in their system and that their lineup can get it done that they don't go down 2 games in a row. Skinner had an enormous bounce back effort. He's been questionable throughout this series. And the biggest part of the game, well, there's many storylines, but for me, Vegas came out hot. They were flying and they got an early power play. And it was one of those power plays where they didn't score, but I was like, oh no, that's the job of a PP. If you're not going to get a goal, at least create momentum. They had a ton of chances. Skinner stood on his head at the beginning of the game. And without that, if Vegas goes up 1-0 there, who knows, right? You don't understand. You can't get in the minds of these guys. Maybe it's just such a killer goal that they're not able to bounce back. But Skinner was kicking. He looked great. And then the boys took over. They played with so much pace. And the power play merchants, I call them the power play merchants of death. So you can mention, yeah, they kill teams on the power play. Game 4 was a big time eye-opening game for fans of the Oilers and haters of the Oilers that they can beat you 5-on-5 too, because they came and they controlled the play. After that early penalty, they controlled the play the entire time. I mean, the thing about McDavid that's so special is the plays, the speed, the creativity. The fact that when he's on the ice, every single guy, and even if it's like subconscious, they're like, where is he? What's he doing? And that's why Bouchard's able to walk down and unleash that cannon, because any other players round on the net and the high forwards just like, all right, I got my guy up here. But with McDavid, you're constantly like, oh, I don't know if he's going to sneak where I'm supposed to be. And so, boom, he gives a great pass there. Ekholm with an absolute cannon of a goal. And Ekholm is the cross-check king.
He just army gloves call
boom,
him that.
Boy, every shift. And Merle,
Stone's got no L5S1 left after the one he gave him in front of the net.
That was actually Yamamoto, I believe.
Was it really? Right?
Yeah, yes. The one that should have been a penalty.
So then Ekholm scored on it then.
Yeah. So Yamamoto went down and he cross-checked Stone, and maybe it could have been called. I'm not going to deny
maybe?
That.
Maybe? Come but on, then, Witt.
Then he goes flying up the ice like a bat out of hell, throws a huge hit along the wall. The puck goes right to Leon, who dishes it over to Ekholm for that goal. Another huge goal. So all of that combined, the 5-on-5, the getting another power play goal, getting that thing going. But what was the biggest storyline for me was Nugent Hopkins finding the back of the net. And I said, I went on Game Notes Daily. I said, he's scoring. Army said, you got to call him out because I was mentioning he's got to get one. He just had, you can't have a 100-point guy not have a goal in the second round. It's, you can't win like that. And he goes out and talk about a weight off your shoulders, and it's at home too. And you saw McDavid. He was pointing at him. He's so fired up for him. Just to know, like, this guy's been here the longest. I played with him. That's how long he's been there. I was fucking horrible. We were the worst team in the league every year. He's been on the team that long. And he finally has this breakout year. I shouldn't say finally, but has a huge year. And then his snake bit struggling. He gets that goal. So I went from kind of panic mode with how dominant Vegas looked in game three to now I've completely switched over to like, I think we got this series.
Yeah.
Now
the Jekyll and Hyde series.
It really is. It's really hard to figure out what's happening. I don't think teams are getting comfortable by any means, but the teams who lose, they're just able to find another gear the next night. And then the team who wins, who wants to get a little momentum going, they can't match it. So it's like each team's coming out. And what's funny enough is like the Oilers had scored, I think they have the first goal in every game, right?
They do.
Yep.
Yeah. So two of the games, it's really kind of lifted them to get going. And then the other two, they fall apart after. So we'll see what happens in Vegas, and we can get into the bullshit after. But an enormous bounce back effort, a great game by Skinner, who probably isn't getting enough credit just because of the way, you know, being a rookie, that's tough sledding, dude. And he's had some tough moments, but he's also had bounce back games, which is the true sign of mental toughness.
Coming from a non-biased perspective, I felt like the refs ruined the game a little bit in that first period. I thought that the slash they ended up giving Theodore after he took 17 cross checks to the spleen from Costin, and then he turns around and gives him a little love bag tap, and then Costin's fucking rolling around the ice. It should have been offset. Both those guys should have been going. Do you not agree? I'll ask Merles. I'm not asking this Homer Witt. Do you not agree that Costin cross checked Theodore in the spine slash rib?
Yeah. If anything, let it all go or call them both, like you said, get it 4-on-4. But yeah, that's not a power play. But I was happy. I had Oilers next goal, so I was happy.
David Stern calls. That's what those are.
So not only that, and then it ends up in the back of their net, but then also the third goal in which, like, come on here. Like, Stone got mugged in front of the net. The cross check was so vicious, I actually thought it was Ekholm who did it. I didn't know it was Yamamoto. So they got away with two there, and then they ended up going back and Ekholm buries it. I felt the game was over once they got that 3-0 lead. But from an overall standpoint, I felt that Edmonton deserved to win the game. They played with that pace that they had in game two, right? That's when they had that big explosion game, and they came back after the first game where Leon had four. And we interviewed him on TNT, and McDavid says, when we play with our pace, we're untouchable. And I felt like they were right back to that after that shitty game in game three.
So that's what Woodcroft mentioned. He mentioned quite often, like, how much they trust every line. Like the Fogel line with Derek Ryan, and is McLeod on that line as well? Yeah. I can't think
he's,
of it right.
He's looked awesome.
He's awesome. I mean, he screwed Merles. Merles had him. Yeah. Merles had him. I think $100 to win $3,000 to score in the third period. He missed the breakaway.
Yeah, he got that little breakaway. I jump out of my seat 6:45 a.m. and he does a little flip shot. Like, oh. And then
best part, Merles goes from the late games and just immediately walks Lily to school. And then the teachers are like, hey, Lily. And he's like, did you see the breakaway McLeod missed? They're like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? He looks like a crackhead. He hasn't slept. He's muttering to himself about breakaways missed.
He's like, lunch line, fuck the lunch line. How about the money line? I got hosed on it.
Things did get ugly late in this game, though, Biz. Alex Pietrangelo, I thought it was pretty out of character for him. Paul Bunyan chopped right on Leon's wrist / forearm, sent him down. And when you have Connor McDavid, like, physically accost you and grab you, like, he didn't fight him, but he grabbed him. I don't remember ever seeing him do that before either. That's a fucking kind of a dirty move. Not kind of a dirty move. Dirty. Is he going to get a game, two games? What do you think he should get? Because we're still waiting to see what happens.
So it feels like Edmonton has done a good job of trying to get underneath his skin. And we go back to the undisciplined penalty by Evander Kane. I believe it was at the end of the second period in game three where he took that run at him, ended up getting him up. It was first period, gets him up high. And then you felt through over the course of this game, maybe they were getting frustrated based on some of those calls and the fact that they just couldn't get to their game because Edmonton dominated. I don't know if Petro was pissed off because he was going for the empty net up three goals. Regardless, just wires crossed, dumb play, not a hockey play. Have to agree with Woodcroft on it, saying like, well, he better get suspended because that's not a hockey play. And he goes after our top player right now in playoffs wrist. I would say because of the value in this series, because it's getting late and it's playoff hockey, I think it comes down to one game.
No way.
Okay. So, okay. Now
only
that
if Nurse wasn't suspended, if they rescinded it one game, I'm fine.
Correct.
He cannot gain the same suspension
now,
as Nurse.
Now all of a sudden Nurse gets a game for the instigator at the end of game four. So now I'm thinking, well, you can't compare those two things. So I think he might end up getting two. I think he deserves one. And the reason I say that is because it doesn't seem like Dreisaitl's injured in any regard from it. He might have a bruise on his wrist. He's totally fine, right?
So he's totally fine. And he was very adamant. Actually, Merles, before I say what I want to say, what was your take on Leon being on the ice then?
It was ridiculous. Why do you have Connor and him on the ice? You're up 4-1. You're not up 2-1 or even 3-1. It's 4-1. You're trying to go all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals with a two-headed monster. They don't need that extra ice time. And two, I remember in junior, you never wanted to be out there in those last couple minutes. I used to take my tape off my socks, make sure the coach wouldn't put me out there. So that was just a bonehead play by the coach having them on the ice to begin with.
Up two, a little bit more understandable because mm-hmm. the game's still within reach, but up three at that point, and maybe that's why Petro's, it's kind of like putting that, like when you're up 4 or 5 goals and you put the top unit out. So all exactly. of a sudden the penalty killer is like, oh yeah, you want to play this game? I'm going to fucking run you from behind then. It had that tone to it where, with him going after him. Because Whit, I don't feel like anything in the games prior or even in game four, was there a point where Leon took a run at Petro, right? Like there was nothing premeditated there, was there?
So Leon has given him a little stick work throughout the series. He took a penalty, I believe, against him earlier. And Biz, you were 100% right. I think it's been a thing that the team's probably talked about. Top defenseman, over 25 minutes a game, go at Pietrangelo nonstop, try to piss him off. And I remember being in camp with him. He does have a short wick.
Oh,
He does snap out there. So I think over the course of this series, he's been sick and tired. I'll also completely agree with you, which, by the way, you call me a homer. I'm an Oiler. Once an Oiler, always an Oiler. But I've been pretty adamant in terms of, you know, admitting when they've gotten some good calls. They've gotten screwed earlier in the playoffs. That was a tough refereed game if you're a Vegas fan. I completely agree that the Oilers were given a couple calls and not given a few penalties that they probably deserve. So no doubt I'm in agreement with you on that. My thing with Leon was, and this is gamesmanship, and some people may hate it, and it's so quick in the moment, it's hard to think about. He should have grabbed his wrist and like sprinted to the bench and then just gone under the tunnel. And then the league doesn't know if he's playing next game.
Oh, my God.
Hey, tell me I'm wrong.
Balls.
Tell me I'm wrong.
You because fucking
Because all of a sudden,
the league
would contact Edmonton to find out if he's injured. And they'd be saying, he's injured. He's going to try to give it a go game five. And all of a sudden, that's adding on a game. That's adding on a game, no doubt. And when you talk about not being a hockey play, that is the most important thing. I don't remember. And you guys, maybe something will hop into your mind.
Yeah, I got one.
What?
I was actually at the game. You want to know a same exact thing that happened? And it was to another star player. I was actually at the game. I'm 99% sure it was with my buddy Cantanucci, the Nooch. It was in 1992 at Madison Square Garden. Remember it?
Oh, Graves to Lemieux.
Adam Graves to Lemieux, our old teammate, our old owner. And Graves got 4 games for it.
Was Lemieux hurt, though?
Yeah, but Lemieux, yeah, he had a cast. He played with a cast, I think, the rest of that playoffs. I remember him like lifting the cup with a cast on.
Which 4 games back then is basically like life in prison. Right? Can we
if
all
you
agree
got 4
on,
games in the playoff then, I think you'd get kicked out of the league for life now.
Hey, was it Army who texted the group chat that Dreisaitl should have went to the press conference and did the Adam Banks, can't move your wrist?
Dude, but think of what I'm saying. If he goes to the room and then the whole question is, and nobody knows, like, is it broken? Is he able to play? Like, he probably would have got 3 or 4 games.
Well, there's probably Minnesota fans listening to this right now feeling like Faxa did the same thing, because in that 5-minute major that ended up getting Foligno kicked out of that game, very important game in that Dallas series, Faxa went down the tunnel, but then ended up returning. But by then it was like, no, he got the 5-minute major in the gate. So it already played a factor for them, where I agree with you, where if it's a slimy move, but hey,
that's how you win.
That's how you win,
slime
man.
Ball.
Slime. You got to be a complete slime ball.
My thought was, and I'm sure this is probably what Petro would say to the league in the hearing, when he wound up, I mean, full on over the head, like the
Atlanta
what
Braves,
is it? Like the carnival game when you slam home the thing to try to get the ding.
Or that's maybe the Indians.
He had the stick over his head. I thought, no doubt, he was just breaking his stick. I thought he was just going to break his stick. And so maybe that was what he was thinking. And all of a sudden, he gets him in the wrist somehow. But
you're saying he's going to tell player safety, I was just going to break my stick, and it just so happens Leon's wrist was in the way?
No, break Leon's stick.
Oh.
Like he was. Okay. I'm like, there's no way. Like as the stick's over his head, I'm like, shouldn't have been slashing him. And no, he gets him right in the wrist. And I love seeing Connor jump in there. I mean, you wouldn't expect anything less, but it just shows how close these guys are. He also had no idea if his wrist was broken, I'm assuming. But when you go to what happened with Nurse and Hag, and Nurse getting that suspension, which, by the way, that's not really, I guess it is up to the league. So the rule is if you instigate a fight in the final 5 minutes, it's an automatic game suspension, and the coach gets fined $10,000. The league has the ability to look at the tape and rescind it. After the game, Mark Stone said in the locker room that Hag had actually asked him to fight off the faceoff. So having one of their players say that, and then, yes, Nurse went in and dropped the gloves first, but that was a good fight. It wasn't just a good fight. It was an excellent fight. It was like playoff hatred type fight at the end of a game. But I really thought after seeing it and after how it all went down, it would get rescinded. Okay, you know what? By the letter of the law, that is a one-game suspension. They decided not to. Because of that, if it comes out that Petro has the same amount of game suspension as Nurse for a straight-up, square-off fight, that's the biggest joke call in the NHL this year.
And you'll be okay if Petro gets two games and Darnell gets one.
Yep. As long as it's longer than Nurse, I'm okay with it.
And I think we can all agree.
If Nurse had been rescinded, I was 100% fine with one game. I think one game's fine, but you cannot tell me that you can even those two up. That would be the biggest bunch of bullshit I've ever seen.
Incredible scrap. I think we can all agree though, if Petro's out for two games, I would say that there's no way that Vegas is winning this series. Not with the fact that they have a third string goalie in right now, or you could say a second string. Cause I was just counting the fact that how many they've lost.
Yeah. So that's another argument.
Are we going to see Quickie at all?
Yeah. I think you got to go to Quick, man.
I think what you do is you go to Aiden Hill in game five. And if he's no good, then you go to Quick because Aiden Hill was good in relief in game three. I don't think that this game was his fault at all. And I mean, even that Bouchard goal, it seemed like there was a massive screen in front and it was a laser that he stepped into. Same with the Ekholm goal. That was another laser.
But so the Bjugstad goal, he was kind of, I don't know where, he was kind of swimming on the right side of the net. Like that's a pretty easy wraparound to stop, I would think.
So you start the veteran Quickie?
I don't hate what you're saying because if they lose, you can go to Quickie game six on the road where Hill just struggled. So I don't hate that. But I also wouldn't be surprised to see you go to a two-time Stanley Cup champion back home in what feels, I hate saying must win, but I mean, you're going back to Edmonton down 3-2. That series is over.
A couple of notes here in Vegas. It was their first regulation road loss in 15 games. Pretty impressive stuff. Biz, I'm not sure if you knew they were the least penalized team in hockey this season. They're the most penalized in the playoffs right now. Currently have 201 penalty minutes in nine games, including 134 in their two losses. This series is averaging 12 penalties per 60 minutes, by far the most in the league. And although they kept the Edmonton to just one goal on six power plays so far, last night, Oilers are scoring 15.1 goals per 60 minutes. Vegas just 2.3 per 60 on the power play. Like that's a giant discrepancy. So if they keep fucking getting penalties, they're going to lose the series.
All right. Did you have the number of penalty minutes they had in the 82-game season? I want to say it's like 599, isn't it?
Boom. Bingo. 599.
And they have over 200 already in how many playoff games?
Nine.
But you've been spreading that gospel everywhere I look, I hear about it. I think you were even on PMT talking about it.
It was on Good Morning America. They were like, lunatic Bissonette with the big nose talking about Vegas?
If there's anything to prove that I'm the biggest mush on the planet, it's the fact that stat. Yeah. I said it but going into the series, and they have just been fist right up their arsehole with this fucking the penalty minute situation. J- Jesus Christ.
Biz, we got to send you off on a high note. We got to talk about your Leafs. They found some hope in the Everglades. They're not done yet. They come back to core four. Finally got a couple goals. Big deal, by the way. They won 2-1, went down to the wire. They're going back to Toronto for game five. Joseph Woll, I don't know if you remember. We talked about this guy like a month ago, saying, are we going to see this guy in the playoffs? He's been pretty good. I don't know. We'll see what happens, but he was excellent last night.
He was excellent. He looked so confident, so athletic. He made some big stops. Before we get to anything, though, can we talk about that Gudas hit on Kampf?
Fucking Gudas
is straight up belligerent. I want Gudas. That's what Jonesy should do. Get Gudas to fill it immediately.
Make him the captain. Sign him to a 7-year extension.
What'd you think of the hit, though, Biz? Maybe so close to the whistle, just playing to the whistle, or do you think it was possibly? I couldn't believe that they ended up on the power play at the end of that.
Right. I thought that they were at least going to even it off. So I was a little bit upset about that. I think that he'd already committed to the hit, and then the whistle went at the worst time where he'd already committed. I was just happy at the fact that Kampf got back up, because I feel like he's been one of their best forwards. He is so fast. He's skating well out there. And like, he's been contributing. Obviously in game three, two assists maybe, but either way, that fourth line of him and Lafferty have been playing excellent for them. So I didn't want to see them lose that speed. I thought going into the game, all I wanted to see was a full 60. And I think that that's the best we've seen Toronto look all of playoffs. Some people are biting back saying, oh, that was the worst game of playoffs for Florida. I would agree. They didn't look like themselves. They didn't really look like they had that jump. But from a defensive perspective, from shot blockings, from having five guys back in the house, from getting in lanes, advancing the puck from zone to zone, and just kind of committing to that overall team game, I thought they looked their best. Nylander has looked really good in this series. The goal was obviously a monkey off his back, where that couldn't have came at a more perfect time. Florida fans are probably bitching at the fact that it went off the referee and right in the slot.
The ref kicked it to him. Like, let's be honest.
I talked to a couple hockey guys and obviously agreed on the fortuitous bounce. They're saying, though, as Ekblad, as the net front defenseman, you shouldn't commit until it gets there. You should hold that post every time. That was the one critique they would have had on the goal overall, where he was anticipating that puck's going around, and I get that. I can't say who I talked to about it, but they say that you need to hold the net front as the defenseman before that actually gets there. But for Marner to get that insurance goal when he did, another guy who needed to get the monkey off the back, was so huge. So the fact that part of the core four is activated and they know how they have to play in order to beat this Florida team, I am 10 times more confident after watching game four in their game going back home to at least force game six. If Woll looks awesome, the overall team D look great, they got contributions from two of the guys. Now all of a sudden you got to see Tavares, you got to see Matthews, and then continue to see Nylander play the way he's played, and then hopefully fucking Marner can find his game as well, because if all of it starts working, this is one team that they could take advantage of. I think we can all agree here that Toronto on paper is the superior team. Can we at least agree on that?
I'm sorry, just watching Florida, like, and thinking of this being the roster that won the President's Trophy without Tkachuk, I'll say even on paper, but this Florida team is so good.
If it wasn't for Bob, they're taking game three, or maybe it was game two at home. And if it wasn't for in game four, in that second period, they should have been up 3-4-0 at some point. So really, Bob slapping a little bit of lipstick on a pig, where he's elevating the performance of that team.
Earls, what do you got so far in that?
I'm happy with this. I like the Leafs going home. I think they're going to win this game. Woll look great. I just think the D on Florida is better. That's why I can't give them a better thing on paper. But I believe in this Leafs thing. Like we talked about yesterday, if they're going to get through this, it's going to be like the Red Sox beating the Red Sox curse. It's going to be crazy down 0-3. So I'm actually like really excited. I'm really pulling for them now, because I think it's going to be a great thing. And Nylander was the best player. He was buzzing all night. And where did he score his goal from finally?
Blue paint.
Blue paint. Go down to the mixer and look what happened. I want to shout out Reinhardt, too. He was flying yesterday. He was buzzing around, and he got a goal in the mixer as well, too. So he looked great, but I'm a Leaf. I'm a Leaf again.
What a great all-around player Sam Reinhardt is. Mm. I mean, you see it even more in playoffs. Just so good defensively. way more skilled than he gets credit for. And there's a great article on The Athletic about Joseph Wall. And I guess meditation has really led him to find another level playing like professionally. He does it for, I think, close to like an hour a day, it mentioned, if not half hour a day, all about focusing. He has different types of meditation. And for a goalie, right? I mean, it's hard to step into games, and he did so well down the stretch. That was the first professional playoff game he's ever started. And to just chuck him in a must-win game, you got to imagine that his off-ice work on his brain and his mental toughness no doubt had something to do with that, because once Florida made it 2-1, you knew they were coming. You knew that it was going to be just try to hold on to this for Toronto. And because of him and a lot of block shots, he was able to. The thing is, like, all right, yeah, Toronto, they blocked, I think, 21 shots or something like that. It's like, why aren't you blocking shots every game? Like,
that's what you're supposed to do every game, guys.
It took them have their entire organization fired and traded to decide to start really laying it on the line. But the fact that they're going home, the only thing that really could make this worse is if they somehow go home and lose in a stinker. Because then you're like, oh, Jesus, I wish we lost down there. Because now you're in front of your fans. You better hope that you have a good performance. But I'm with you. I think they force a game six.
Wait, you mentioned Sam Reinhart there, and I heard an interesting quote from Paul Maurice the other day just talking about how he is one of the smartest hockey players that he's ever coached. His hockey IQ is off the charts, and he's always teaching his teammates. Like, when he's sitting on the bench, he's always talking to everyone on the bench and trying to help them and try to better their game. So I just thought that's a pretty interesting thing coming from Maurice about Reinhart.
How about Tkachuk, though? No goals in the series. And we mentioned with his physicality, you remember some of the hits he took in the first round? I don't know if he's playing banged up, but if the Leafs do have any chance, you know, he has, I'm not going to say slowed down a little bit because he's got some nice assists, but the goal scoring isn't there.
He blocked the shot with his hand.
Yeah.
At some point too. I wonder how much of a factor that's playing as well. Like, these guys have been playing playoff hockey for 2 months now. So yeah. Their bodies are pretty banged up. That's another reason why I don't mind the Leafs coming back.
Ooh. What was your opinion on Marner just taking those punches? I tweeted out, it reminded me of Sedin when he was just a punching bag for Marchand in the finals. Like, don't you want to see Marner just go right back at him? The game's over. The game is, the buzzer had already went off. And that's a former teammate just drilling him over and over.
Yeah. Do I want a player like Nathan MacKinnon, who's a snap show and who sees red and who has that much compete? But it's not his identity. It's not who he is. He's disciplined in those types of situations, and you know, doesn't really want that type of physicality. Now, was it, you said it was Tkachuk doing it? Who was Bennett plowing down under the pile there?
That
was kind of gutless too. It seemed like his arms were being held back. Where Bennett's just been a menace this series.
I love him. They got to take him in
the Hannibal Lecter the crate when they bring him in with the face mask on.
Yeah, and Marner wouldn't drop the F-bomb after. He said, "I know exactly what he's going to try to do." Talking about Tkachuk, so just stay composed. I don't really give a flying. You know what the next word is. Like, just drop an F-bomb, buddy. It's hockey. Yeah,
just let it. But he's a great example for the kids.
Yeah, we're not.
He's a great example. How could you not love him?
We got to talk about your X factor, Luke Shen, man. Turned out to be one of the great deadline deals. He's been a top four, playing a shutdown role. The only defenseman still playing who has who's been on for fewer goals against per 60 minutes, Jacob Slavin. So that's how good Chen's playing right now.
He also injured the goalie, though. We can't.
Brought us one. Wall, who's going to end up winning four straight and bringing us out of the second round, keep the change.
Looks like I pulled him over.
But physical presence, he won't back down from anyone. And as we've mentioned before on the podcast, like he's improved his puck skills a lot because he's worked with Adam Oates. So these little, he keeps it pretty simple. But these little breakout passes and these little dink plays that you have to make constantly under pressure, he's great at them. That's why I was okay with him going against the Tkachuk line, where I'm like, not only can he play with the puck, but he ain't going to be scared at those guys forechecking on him. If anything, he's inviting the contact. So overall, I mean, I'm so happy I brought in these X factors. I know that you guys were giving me shit because it added an extra 17 minutes to the last podcast when we were doing the playoff previews for the second round. But hey, most of my guys have been the X factor too. Who else did I have in there? Marchment. I think that he's looked great.
Which team
he's
talking
out
about?
He's out though now. He got dummy.
So good. You mushed him.
Well, I think he was solid when he was in. He was fucking laying down the body. Who were my
what
other
did you guys
X?
Think of the camera angle? that ESPN used.
I texted the group chat right away.
What the hell are they doing?
I feel like I'm all the way up in the press box.
It's either too close. I mean, I guess what I was reading online was that they were getting complaints from viewers in terms of the camera being too close in Florida. Well, they ended up going so far up that at the beginning, it was like watching game tape that only like the coaching staff has. And I'd rather have it up close where it was. I know it's a little bit closer, but the way they moved it all back, it was super frustrating.
It makes it seem slower and not as engaging with the fans because the volume in some cases, it feels like it's dead in the rink. Boys, I got to get going here to the studio. I got two big games tonight with the Devils, Hurricanes, Kraken, and Stars. Only two things I wanted to say about those games. They got to start Schmid. I don't know if we've already mentioned that earlier in the podcast. He needs to be the starter in there if they have any chance of winning at home or in Carolina, which is nearly impossible these days. Jordan Martinook and what he's done, going from being on waivers to now having 9 points in these playoffs. He had a goal and two assists last game to help
get them
up. 9 points
in this series.
Yeah. After the first one.
He had no points in the first round.
Okay, I thought maybe he had a couple. Holy shit. So that's been a huge elevation for them in the offense department where we all know they lost three of their top scorers. And then what was the other note? Oh, getting Haskinen back. What'd he play? 30 minutes last game. Had an assist. He's the best defenseman still left in playoffs and a stud. And with the fact that they were able to get him back, man, who knows what's going to happen in that series. So how do you guys feel about Devils Hurricanes? You think that's ending? And then Kraken Stars, and then I'm out of here. So
Canes are going to Canes at home. Yeah. How do you go against them at home? Devils are the Devils. Even we had Pasha on today, and he
you knows. Even, you can tell you can see a everything's defeat changed. In him. Mm-hmm. Everything's changed, Merles. His voice was just, he's a dead dog walking. And you know what he's blaming, Biz?
Is
that he's
chair.
At your apartment. He's blaming being in your chair. He's like, everything's been fucking ruined since I got the business place.
He went from Manhattan to hanging out at my crib with all the mush gods. That's what that Buddha head is, the mush god. That's what it's got to be. It's got to be. So I've
Biz,
had enough
before you go, we do have some breaking news.
This better be two games.
No. According to ESPN, Ryan Reynolds is out in the bid to own the NHL Ottawa Senators.
Wow.
His group's out, or he's out of the group?
His group is out.
Wow. You know what I think is going to happen then? I think the Kimmel group's going to get it.
That's Snoop's group?
That's with Abel, with the weekend.
The weekend.
Kimmel and his family, they own the Penguins, as we mentioned last podcast, and they have experience. They ended up flipping it and selling it to the Boston group there, or whatever you want to call it, the Red
Fenway
Sox
Sports Group.
Fenway Sports Group. So I think that the Kimmels and the weekend are going to be now owners of the Ottawa Senators. That's my prediction. Maybe in a last ditch effort, I've reached out to his manager, Snoop's manager. We're hoping to get him on for 15 minutes to plead his case as to why the NHL and their fans should get behind Snoop owning the team. So maybe we can get a little rivalry going mixed up.
Can he shotgun some weed through the Zoom?
All right,
the NHL, they just finally want a good music performer for the All-Star game. Like, let's just give it to the weekend because every year we have like fucking Smash Mouth playing our All-Star game.
Oh, yeah. Did you not see him at the Super Bowl doing that? Like, oh, where am I going? Where am I? That video. Anyway, I'm out of here, boys. Wish me luck.
Good luck.
Love you guys.
Hey guys, it's Big Cat, and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern. For the first time since Rough and Rowdy 1, every single fight will be a brand new brawler, and we found the wildest hillbillies the holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 this Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com.
All right, Witty, before we get to tonight's games, the pee-pee whack for Alex Pietrangelo came down the pike. It was announced he won't be playing in Game 5 for his slash on Leon Draisaitl's arm late in Game 4. But that's it. It's just a one-game sussy, and we already mentioned Darnell Nurse's one-game sussy for the late instigator penalty. This is from Sportsnet Stats. During the regular season, there were two instigator penalties in the final 5 minutes of the third period. Neither resulted in a suspension. Darnell's getting a suspension. Pietrangelo's getting the same game. Whit, this doesn't feel too right. I know you tweeted about it already, but it's official, so let's elaborate.
I'm shocked, appalled, I'm disgusted. I don't know why those two suspensions match each other. And when you talk about the instigators that got rescinded in the regular season, do you even think one of those, the guy actually asked the other guy to fight off the faceoff 20 seconds earlier?
No shot.
And if you just wanted to keep that one game suspension, give Petro another game. It's not right. I've never seen this many people agree on something. Is anyone out there besides like huge Vegas fans like agreeing with this decision?
It doesn't seem like it online. I know you play people in hockey world. I know Dallas Eakin said he liked the decision. I think Bieksa was giving him a hard time for it on Sportsnet or whatever network going up in Canada. But yeah, it just doesn't match up. I know one's a set rule. You have to do it if it happens. And the other one's a little bit more subjective. And I think it was Down Goes Brown who mentioned, well, they gave him a major, which means, you know, an injury or somebody was trying to hurt somebody, but there was no intent to injure. It just contradicts itself as far as what Pietrangelo did. But I guess in the long run, it evens off. Each team is losing a pretty significant defenseman. So I don't think, Pietrangelo's obviously better than Nurse probably, but
the crimes aren't even. That's the issue. You know what I mean? The suspensions are even, but the crimes aren't.
I guess I'm going to go into what they were thinking. They're going to keep. All right. So they're not going to rescind the major, which I don't, or the instigator. I don't agree with that. But if they're not going to get rid of that, then they look at it and probably say, all right, well, that is a one game suspension. Like, I think it is a one game suspension. And they are like, all right, well, this evens it out. We're giving him a suspension. We're not going to rescind this one. It's 2-2. Right, it's a close series, but if that is the decision or what went into the decision, I just don't agree with it because it's just what your eyes see. It's the eye test. He William Wallaced his wrist, like screaming freedom or screaming I don't know what at him. It was just it doesn't make sense. You look at it, you see two guys fight. Yes, Nurse went in there. They'd already talked about it. The captain of the Golden Knights said after the game, he was the one who said that he'd already asked him to go. And then you see, you know, the freedom chop. It was like last of the Mohicans.
William Wallace called 50, man. 50.
50. That movie for me. I think I still to this day say it's my favorite movie, which people have then chirped me and said, like, Braveheart's not even a good movie. I'm like, what planet are you from?
Yeah, what are you smoking? I mean, Mel Gibson's, say what you will about him, but he's directed a couple of doozies. You ever see Apocalypto, Whit?
No, Jaguar I have not. Oh, how about in Braveheart? Because he goes with the French girl, right? And the French girl was going to be queen. Is that correct?
I'm not sure the lineage, but yeah, she was going to be something.
This is so old school Chicklets. I just can't help but smile right now. Mid-hockey conversation just diverging off into movies. I love it.
Yeah. Biz has his perm going and his no-tie look on TNT. We're back in the basement. But finishing Braveheart, when she goes and tells the old king, his blood lives inside me, but he can't say anything. He's like he would be screaming, cut her head off, but he can't even talk. In the end, I disagree with it. I think one and rescind the instigator was the perfect decision, and it sucks. But you know what? It is a way bigger loss for Vegas. Way bigger. And if they can go in and get it done, then Nurse comes back, Petro comes back, but they're at home. So I still love the Oilers' position. And Biz, fuck him. You know what? Idiot is on the podcast. Grinnelli, tell me if I'm wrong. When we recorded earlier before the Dallas and the Carolina games, he agreed with me on that, no?
Yeah, he did.
Okay. And then on Twitter, he sends me the I'm crying face when I said I was disgusted with the decision. Either he's really, really dumb, or he knows exactly how to get under my skin, or he is both.
He's an entertainer. At the end of the day, he's an entertainer.
The clown at the circus is an entertainer as well.
dumb as a fox. A lot of people saying the league took the easy way out, which, you could probably certainly make that argument. But I don't know. Hey, what's done is done. I mean, teams are going to move on, take the next game, and, you know, nothing you can do about it now. Can't cry over spilled milk.
Oh, exactly.
No, you can't. Meanwhile, down in Raleigh, game 5 of Jersey, Carolina, very tight, very tense affair, went to OT. Finally, we got a fucking game in this series with after, four blowouts. The game was going to end with either handshakes or flights to Newark, and Oh, man, you hate to see games end this way. A penalty, Jonas Siegenthaler, a puck over glass, 5 minutes in. And I think a lot of people other than Canes fans are probably like, don't let the game end here, man. You know, it's just that it's the penalty's been around for 15, 16 years, but it just you don't want to see a fucking series end on it. Well, lo and behold, Jesper Fast, 709 in. He got the OTPPGWG. Series over. Good night, Irene. Jersey's done. Carolina moves on. You got to give bulk marks with Roddy fucking Brindamore, what he's doing with this team. He lost all those guys, and they're marching on like they're not missing anybody right now.
It's amazing. I'm done doubting them. It's over. And I actually love going down there. If they went to the cup final, I'd be pumped.
Get us back to Teats. What a bar.
What an atmosphere. I remember telling Justin Williams, we played golf the day before the Sandbagger. And I said, dude, it's pretty good living down here, huh? He's like, it's an amazing place to live. It's just, so Carolina, congratulations. Yeah. Jordan Staal, guys, that's just, he's not really slowed down at all. Like, he's just a straight up shutdown center.
Yep.
When he was on the ice, not flashy RA. Like I said, one of the episodes, doesn't look like he's super fast, but he's rarely getting outskated. He's so big, great instincts, good stick. So against Jack Hughes, when they were able to get the matchups at home, he had nothing. Jersey played well. It was the first I read. It was the first quality start they got from a goalie this series. So
deepest.
When you look back on it, you don't get goaltending in the playoffs. You're not going to be able to win. That's a team who's going to get good. I think the Devils, I think you're looking at a little 5 to 7 year run in terms of them being in the hunt every year.
Tough to be upset if you're a Devils fan right now with the way the future's looking.
Exactly. Maybe that makes me an optimist, but if I'm a Devils fan, I know, guys, swear to God, I just said that.
You're changing on us, Whit.
I know. I don't know what happened. I had kids, or my wife gave birth, but I'm a dad. You beat your crosstown rival. You pound them after being down 0-2. Amazing comeback just to get through the first round. So tough now. Get to the second round. You get against a I'm not going to say a championship team, but they're consistently in the hunt. They were in the Eastern Conference Finals 2019, and you ran into a buzzsaw. And better times ahead, and Carolina's moving on. Carolina, Florida. Now, Clown Boy over on TNT, Biz Nasty, he thinks the Leafs are going to win the series. Truthfully, he does in his brain. Which I respect the hell out of, but I don't think it's going to happen. I'm betting against it. The juice is heavy, RA.
Is it? I haven't even looked because you know I'm locked in on the future. But yeah, hope can be a dangerous thing for a team up 3-1.
If Florida's able to not have this collapse, that Eastern Conference Final would be awesome. Florida, Carolina. That would be great hockey.
We might go all seven, just go back and forth between Raleigh and Sunrise.
Yeah, I can't. My body's like screaming at you right now.
Do the Florida Panthers, this kind of just hit me, and I could be a complete idiot for saying this, but do the Florida Panthers remind you of the 2019 St. Louis Blues at all? I mean, they're bullying their way to the cup final. They kind of sneaked in the playoffs. They don't have like, I mean, Tkachuk's a major name, but other than that, it's, I mean, Barkov, obviously. But I mean, I feel like the two teams are kind of comparable here.
I don't hate it.
Yeah.
I don't hate it at all.
That's legit. Yeah,
that is, in terms of the bullying aspect and playing hard hockey, that's a great analogy, actually. So I went from
sneaked in as well.
Yeah, that was, and I mean, I guess a rookie goalie in Binnington versus Bob, who's proven that he, you know, he's an elite player, elite goalie in the league. Yeah, that's a great call. But Florida Carolina will be very fun if Florida finishes them off. The missed chances. I don't know if I've ever witnessed wide open nets be straight up shanked and Fast had it. And Myers was even worse. Now, Meyer ends up getting a goal, I don't know if that was prior, but either way, Fast ends up. You're thinking about that thing all night, that missed open net, if you lose that game, and instead he gets the winner, the hockey gods. Oof. And they never stop coming at you. And Martinook talked about him. I think Staal did an interview, said he's been their best player in the playoffs. Even without the points in the first round, he was awesome. And yeah, you can talk about every single guy. Slavin is a beast. That guy, nobody can get around him.
Guys, in terms of the Devils, like what happened to Jesper Bratt? Like where did he go? Why was he so bad? Like what were you guys seeing out of him?
He kept hearing Biz say his name, so he had to go to therapy.
It was that doll Pasha made. That creepy doll, because Pasha was probably sticking pin cushions in it too when he wasn't scoring. You know that he's a sicko.
He said he was. He actually said he was doing that.
Yeah, he's a sicko. When you're undersized, it's harder in the playoffs. It's a harder game. The game is made now for guys. They don't have to be huge. You see it all around the league. The game is also completely different in the playoffs. I think last episode we said, I don't ever remember the difference being this to this degree. It's rougher. It's harder. He's super quick, but at times I saw him getting out-muscled. Tonight, I don't remember who just like totally kind of rode him into the boards, finished him off, took the puck. I was surprised that Jack Hughes explained to me how he plays 14 minutes tonight.
Wow. I hadn't looked at the box. Holy shit. That's
14 minutes. And Jordan Staal played 9 seconds more than him. So I basically look at it like Brindamore's like, well, if he's not out there, he doesn't need to be out there. I don't know if I'm wrong on that, but it makes sense. But it does not make sense. Jack Hughes not playing 20 minutes tonight, unless he got injured.
Yeah, I mean, what would Lindy's logic be there? I mean, you don't fucking bench a guy in a must win. No. You don't make an example out of him at this time of year. You know,
I'd be shocked if that's what it was. Something could have happened. But how about Burns' shot to tie it up late in the second? And he has that wrist shot from the point. He just drags it in. It's heavy. That thing's probably 90 miles an hour, high 80s minimum, and it's a snapshot and a little bit of a screen, and I think it might have actually been deflected. But Carolina Hurricanes, they don't stop coming at you. The fans are insane. They just got a great vibe down there. And when you mentioned the puck over the glass, it was like I had a flashback in time. The year Carolina won the Cup, they played Buffalo in the Eastern Conference Finals. Buffalo was loaded that year. Buffalo's defense, they had like a ton of injuries. I think four of the five guys went down. I think Brian Campbell was still playing. I could, my details are probably a little bit off here. But in game 7 in Carolina, one of the Buffalo guys flipped it over the glass and they scored a power play goal.
Wait, I actually have the exact stat here. You want me to read it?
Was this a tweet?
Yeah, Jeff Merrick posted it. He said, a note from our great Hockey Night in Canada.
I didn't even see his tweet. No joke.
He goes, the puck over the glass penalty that Lindy was referring to was game 7, June 1st, 2006. Brian Campbell got the penalty in a 2-2 game, and the winner was then scored by Rod the Bod, Rod Brindamore.
Wow.
So Lindy brought it up. I thought of that when you said that, because I remember Merles and I were just talking about it. Buffalo, I think, could have beat them. Definitely could have beat him. Went game 7. They had no D. They lost everyone. And that year they were loaded. So a flashback in time. Carolina got it done that year. Let's see if it happens again.
Absolutely. And, to answer your question about, you know, where was, yeah, Jesper Bratt, I think it's a case of a guy, you know, in the playoffs. Sometimes guys just got to skin their knee a little bit and learn what the playoffs are all about. I'm thinking like Matt Boldy of Minnesota this year. Great year he had, 31 goals. And, you know, he had a rough playoffs. I think, you know, like teams have to go through the ringer a little bit to learn how to win. I think players have to go through that playoff ringer to realize, all right, this is a different game and I got to bring a little bit more here. But, you know, Jersey fans, you had a great year. You know, Jack blossomed into a true superstar. Nico Hischier, one of the best two-way centers in the game right now, would I say. Career highs in goals, points, assists. Dawson Mercer had a great series, 7 points in 12 games in his first postseason. So, you know, if you're a Devils fan, things are looking up. Fitzy's got you in a good spot, so... As for Carolina, they're going to wait for the winner of Florida-Toronto. Like we said, this is their second Eastern Conference Finals appearance in the last 5 seasons. So can't wait to see who they play. Hopefully Florida, and we'll get down south.
And I actually originally thought maybe they're saying, or I would think they're saying, please go 7. Just keep playing. Beat the shit out of each other, whoever wins. But maybe the way they're going right now, obviously, say you'll take 3-4 days, no doubt, but you might think of the momentum and how you're feeling and be like, I'll play again. So who would have home ice between Toronto and Carolina?
Carolina won the division. So
is it points or is it if you win the division? I think if you're second in division have more points, you'd have home ice.
Yeah, because they do. Yeah, you got to fight your way out of your division. That's
it would be Carolina anyways. Carolina finished the season with 113 points and Toronto finished with 111.
So they're chilling at home. They don't have to travel anywhere. Life is good tonight. Tonight's a night. Back in 2008, maybe it's different. You're having a ton of beers. You're having a fun night together with the boys. And you're still thinking we got a chance at the Stanley Cup. When we went on the run to the finals in Pittsburgh, I think we won in 4, 5, and 5. And every single time we had a night and a half diesel. It was, those are the best memories for sure.
I feel like on cup winning teams, you always hear that. You always hear that they go out after their wins and they really enjoy the wins.
If you know you have time, I can't imagine how you don't. The next day you're in there getting treatment, little sweat. No, they probably won't get on the ice tomorrow. Just get in there. It's just, oh, that's living. It's nice out. The weather's good. It's always nice down there, I guess, in Raleigh. But you're living it, so good for them.
Wait, do you think a long layoff can get a team out of rhythm a little bit? I know that most, they generally play every other night. Sometimes there's 2 days in there. But do you think teams sort of get in a rhythm, and by being off for maybe 6, 8 days, that could kind of throw them off a bit?
No doubt. And you can get back into the rhythm. But right when game one starts, it's, yeah, you've had enough. Your muscle memory of just, you play, you end up falling asleep late. The next day you go in, maybe you skate, probably you don't, as you're moving on, depending on injuries, and boom, you're right back in bed, and then you wake up and it's game day. So you're just, it's very, not monotonous, but
methodical.
Methodical, yeah. It just becomes like such second nature.
Like a routine.
Yeah, and then you get the 4 or 5 days off, which feels good, but to get back into it, it can sometimes take a little time. But the fact they're at home game one against whoever they play, The place will be rocking so much, they'll just be buzzing again.
Absolutely, no doubt. Did you guys see the Carolina tweet, the cameo tweet they put together right after the game? Did you see that, Whit?
It's incredible.
That was first class. That's a hell. Whoever thought of that, they're probably going to be getting hired somewhere else at some point, running something big, because that's funny. I didn't even recognize some of the actors. And actually, you can explain what it was.
Yeah, explain it, all right.
Sorry,
yeah.
All right.
No, that's all right, buddy. The Carolina Hurricanes, they must have done this, I don't know, days or weeks ago. All these actors in New Jersey that have cameos, they hired them to say the words. And you have one of these, don't you, G? A cameo or something similar to that? Right?
I used to, yeah.
Okay, they used to do it, I think, too.
Yeah, but you're basically kind of just reading the words off. You're not like, you know, reading it like a book, paying attention. So they sent them out to all these Jersey actors, one of those goofballs from the Real Housewives, Johnny Sack from The Sopranos, and they were reading all the stuff about Carolina. Like, you could tell they were just reading it, you know, for the dough, and they spliced it all together, like, in this, like, minute-long video. I don't even know if it's trolling, because they won the series, but it's absolutely brilliant. Just whoever runs their social media, you know, fucking little clap, little hat off them. It was...
I shouldn't even have said trolling, because even New Jersey, I mean, you have to laugh at that.
Yeah, absolutely.
The one actor, Johnny Sachs, right? From Sopranos?
Yeah.
He was just straight up looking down, reading something, and then looking up, saying a line, looking down, reading something. Like, he was... The other guys were, I feel like, a little more energetic.
A little more animated, yeah.
Animated, yeah.
Doing it for the paycheck. Okay, meanwhile, down in Dallas, the Stars built a 3-0 lead on goals from Wyatt Johnston, Rupe Hintz, and Joe Pavelski. Of course, Seattle does what they do. They clawed their way back into it, made it a 3-2 game headed into the third, but Dallas was able to finish them off. It feels like they kind of have this series by the balls right now. Ottinger had that one bad game. He's been outstanding since. Do you think Seattle forces a seventh game here, Whit?
So I hope not. And the reason I say that is because after we interviewed Barkley, went to the airport, I was in the Delta Lounge for a while. I was having wine. I felt great. Then I got on the flight. I kept having wine. Then I got home in a great mood after the Barkley interview. And I'm watching hockey. I put a monster wager on Dallas to win the series 4-2. So they won game 4 when we got home. And then I don't know why, I saw some pretty good odds. And now I'm like, oh my God, this bet's alive. They just got to win a road game. I will say that game kind of, it looked like they were just a better team. And I know the first period, Seattle outshot them pretty big. But Lundqvist, even on TNT, said none of them were great chances. They were all like from the outside. Ottinger looked dialed in. So they did get Jason Robertson going. And going into the game, Luke Glendening, Radek Faska, Esa Lindell, Colin Miller, Joel Hanley, and Jason Robertson were the only players on Dallas with 1 5-on-5 point. After the season he had and the player he is, it's like, all right, you can win a round or two, but if a guy like that's that important isn't playing well, you don't really have a chance of winning the cup in my mind. He had 3 even strength points tonight. So for them to look that good and to get it home, and now that's 2 in a row where they've beat them up pretty good, and then they're going back, I think they can close it out. Seattle's going to give them all they can handle, but I think Dallas is able to close it out. Dallas is a hell of a team. The guy I wanted to talk about, too, this Wyatt Johnston. Oof. I was texting, you guys remember Taylor Chorney, former NHLer?
Yes, I remember.
Yes, played in Edmonton, Washington. So we were buddies together, and we were buddies playing together in Edmonton. We've stayed in touch. And he goes, have you seen Wyatt Johnson's like junior career on HockeyDB? I'm like, nope. He played 2019, 2020 in Windsor. He played 53 games, had 30 points in the OHL. So I imagine then he was 17. COVID year happens. He doesn't play anywhere. I'm sure he was on the ice. I'm guessing he was on the ice, but there's no stats for him playing anything. He comes back last year, so his second full OHL year after a year off, gets 124 points. 30 to 124 points with a year in the middle, yes, but no games. Then he goes into the NHL as an 18-year-old and 19-year-old. He had 24 goals this year. I think we're looking at a future absolute stud. I was going to say superstar. I don't know about that. I think if he's this young, this good after the jump he's made, shout out to Chorns for showing me this. There's obviously a crazy trending direction. So they have the famous first-round draft with Ottinger, Heskinen, and Robertson. Now they got this kid who's already playing, drafted this past year. Dallas is a force to be reckoned with, and they're not going anywhere either. So Roope Hintz, that guy continues to impress. He gets skating. He's got the Modano jersey flapping in the back when he's flying down the ice. He had two tonight. Pavelski just continues to defeat time. Even when guys have him lined up, he'll just spin right off. He's just so silky out there. And Heskinen, like we said, he came back last game. He's still got the bubble on, buzzing around. Dallas, if Edmonton is able to beat Vegas, and even if Vegas goes on to win, Dallas is going to be really hard to beat. And I know this series isn't even over, but I consider them a lock in quotations. And now that I've said this, this clip could be used just to really crush me if Seattle comes back. But I think they lock this one down and close it out.
Remember like 20 years ago, it seemed like Edmonton and Dallas played each other every single year in the playoffs. Remember that?
Yep.
It was like every year. Oh, by the way, you mentioned that Wyatt Johnson. We ought to wish him a happy birthday. He's going to be 20 years old this Sunday.
Oh, so 20.
I'm just looking up his stats here. 20 years old. Unbelievable what this kid's doing.
I said 18. Good call.
Yeah. Well, he's 19 right now. So you weren't too far off. So in Seattle, man, like you can't count these guys out. But Grubauer, he's kind of fallen off a bit. I don't know if they cracked the code on in the last few games here, Whit, but I mean, this team does not quit, and I don't know about pulling your goalie when you're down two with 4 minutes left. That's, I think, too risky. I'm a riverboat gambler, but I don't know if I'd pull my goalie that early.
Do it?
Down two. I don't know. Down two goals, probably under 3 minutes, maybe, but 4 minutes, just that extra minute just seems like too much.
Yeah,
it could,
I think that's what, I've seen that way more often now. Maybe that's an analytical thing. But I'd be cool with 3:30. I guess 4 minutes is tough. But if you don't have anything going and you're not really getting that many chances, you're like, all right, well, if we need two, I mean, we have to give ourselves time to at least get the first one. And you're like, risking the fact that we're dead anyways if they end up getting the empty netter.
It seemed to happen like nightly this season. It happened all the time. I don't think we've really seen it. Of course, Florida did the Boston game seven, but other than that, I don't know that too many teams have tied it up and then won it in overtime. But it happened on like almost every other nightly basis during the season this year. But either way, we'll see game six for those two was Saturday.
If Seattle does end up losing, I mean, Seattle fans, kind of same situation as Devils fans.
Yes.
Like
yes.
The future is bright. This season was a success.
I don't know their contract situations. I know Gord's there for a while. That's their guy flying around out there. I don't know Eberle's deal, but he looks awesome. Larson, I mentioned him. He looked great again tonight. He flies around, big body. So they got, you're right, and they beat the Cup champs. I don't know if you just said that. Sorry, but they it's exactly the kind of the same scenario. I would say looking at it, I consider Jersey ceiling a little higher in the next few years. But still, yeah, Seattle, like what a bounce back second year. And by the way, we're legit talking like the series ended tonight. Sam in Seattle is snapping.
No, that's Sammy in Spokane. A couple other notes here. Hey,
and I like latte with goat milk.
Timmy from Tacoma. Congratulations to Nationals' Mark Borowiecki, who announced his retirement on Instagram last week. The hard-nosed defenseman was drafted by his hometown Senators, where he spent 9 years. Then he finished up in Nashville for the last three. Whit, by all accounts, this guy, a beloved teammate, and by all accounts, a damn fine person, a great human being. Do you know Borrow at all?
I don't. I knew playing. I'm pretty sure I played against him. I'm going to look that one up. he was a terror to play against. You never knew. Like, I guess like Gudas a little bit, right? Do they remind you of each other?
Just very menacing look on his face with the no teeth and just kind of looks like, oh, I don't want to fuck this. Like, if I saw him in a bar, I'd go the other way with like that menacing look he has. But great career. Congrats, Borough. Happy retirement from the Chicklets game. Hopefully you enjoy it. We got some shitty news out of Denver. Avs captain Gabriel Landeskog, he underwent a cartilage transplant in his right knee. He's expected to miss the entirety of next season. So just brutal news because he just missed the last season. He's a great guy, and you hate to hear any injuries, of course, but to miss one season and then have to get this done, how much of an emotional toll does this take on a guy with? I know you've had some injuries yourself.
It's tough to deal with, but I saw a picture he posted today at the leg up. I don't know if he was on a train or something, but like big thumbs up. It's just so hard to miss a year. I mean, I missed not a full hockey season, but I was like laid up for that long, I feel like, in terms of skating. And it's just so difficult when you get back, and he's got another year now. So it's just, you just really feel bad for him, especially because after they got that cup, it was like, all right, I think they're set up. Like, they can win another. They can win three of these things. And I know it sounds crazy, but they're that stacked, and he's just such an important part of it. Playoff hockey, Gabriel Landeskog are hand in hand. Just a warrior out there. So that's going to be tough. Mark Mathot had tweeted out, Army said this on Game Notes Daily, that he had the same surgery, and he was never able to get back to the NHL level of skating again. So let's hope that's not the case. But you know, he'll give everything he's got to get healthy again. He's not, in his mind, done at all. So hopefully it all works out. It's a crazy surgery, cartilage replacement. I imagine if you weren't playing a professional sport, you'd just get a knee replacement if that was the case. Maybe I'm way off. Doctors, I'm sure, will be letting me know. Or people that think they're doctors.
That's something like they use a cadaver for, like a cadaver's ligament.
I don't know. Yeah, where do they get the cartilage? Yeah. I have no idea.
Who set the medical school cadavers to the alumni?
Or it could be like fake cartilage. It could be, you know what I mean? Like a product or something that's similar to it. I have no idea. But I'm sure it's a bitch of a rehab.
Yeah, that sucks, man. Well, anyways, Landy, get well, pal. The boys are pulling for you. We hate to see it happen to you. But any other final thoughts on the first round or first two rounds, Whit? I know that aren't over yet, but to me, the crazy swings, like the binge score and the shit ton of goalies, they've gone through 28 goalies already, not even two rounds. It's kind of a wacky playoffs, even though the second round hasn't been as good as the first. It's pretty wacky, though, no?
It's been interesting. I mean, that was the first good game we had of Jersey Carolina. The other games, I mean, if you're not a fan of either team, you're tuning in and they're kind of blowouts. Tonight was awesome. That was back and forth. I think Carolina controlled the play for the most part, but it was finally a good game. Have we had a good game in Dallas, Seattle?
The first game, overtime.
Yes.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yanni Good.
Yes. And then all the Florida Toronto games have been entertaining. So not as good as the first round. A little bit of a letdown, but yeah, all the there's been 28 goalies used.
28 so far, and that was when I wrote this the other day. There may have been one more since. And what's interesting, with five teams have used just one goalie: Rangers with Shesterkin, Tampa with Vasi, Winnipeg with Hellebuck, the Islanders with Sorokin, and Colorado with Gorgiev, and all of them were bounced in the first round. I don't know if that means anything, if there's something to it, but just kind of an interesting little fact there. What do you got, G?
Well, speaking of watching entertaining content, you guys, like we just mentioned, we have a Sandbagger dropping on Wednesday this week with Dave Portnoy and Josh Richards. We also have the Charles Barkley interview dropping on Tuesday. So tune into that on the Chicklets YouTube channel.
The Barkley interview is great. I think the Sandbagger is unlike any other Sandbagger. That's the only way I can describe it. Just a gong show. I had something else to say, though, about
mute
the playoffs.
Conversation.
Damn it. I was thinking, you were talking about the playoffs. You were talking about the goalies. Maybe. Moving forward, like, so many teams rotate throughout the season, 60-40. Maybe that'll be the way in the playoffs someday.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Is this going to be the new norm, you know, two goalies? Because they don't have to be excellent like maybe, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Like last year, you know, Darcy Kemper, he was good, but he certainly didn't steal any of those series for him. And, you know, you look at Skinner right now, I think his save percentage is around 900, but they're winning. So if you got the potent enough offense, you can offset, you know, not having a top tier goaltender. So,
who's your picks for tonight's game? Toronto and then Edmonton.
I don't know the spreads, but I don't really give a shit. I think
I'm saying no spreads, just winners.
No spreads.
Just a pick.
I don't know. I think Edmonton got a little bounce in this step right now. Skinner's played well the last couple of games. I'll probably take Edmonton in that game. I want to see the over-unders. I refuse to take over 7. That's just crazy to need 8 goals in a playoff game, regardless of how many goals are being scored. And obviously, I already got a future on these guys. They lost the last game, but I'm a gambler, so I'll probably throw a little something on the Panthers. I'm definitely not betting the Leafs for obvious reasons.
I actually think Florida gets it done. Yeah. Even the game that every game has been close, but it took a lot for Toronto to hold on to that one. So I think Florida gets it done. And with Petrangelo out, I think Edmonton gets it done too. So I'm with you. We know how this may go now. But what about you, G?
EBR, boys. Everybody rides. I'm with you guys as well. I like Edmonton. And the over RA is actually 6.5. So I don't know. Maybe a little sprinkle there. But yeah, I think Florida closes it out on the other
side
as well.
Last few games, they're not going over.
Exactly. And also, it's not a potential elimination game there, but potential elimination games, they tend to go under, I think, more often than not. But either way, boys, another great show. I don't know if you have any final thoughts. There's a great read on Matthew Tkachuk in The Athletic by Haley Salvian. I think she's Calgary-based or Toronto. She's a Canadian writer. Did a terrific job. They talked to his mom, his siblings, just how he became the player he's become. And, it's a real good read. And Whit, if you do want to catch Apocalypto, it's on Amazon Prime. Highly recommend it. It is subtitled, but it's not like you got to follow major conversations. It's just set way back in like the 1400s. It's a wild flick. Highly recommend it. Give it a whirl.
Do you have any good documentaries for me?
If you haven't seen Air, I know that Air.
Oh, I want to go see that.
That comes out tomorrow on Amazon Prime.
Legit, every night I watch playoff hockey.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
like, I haven't watched anything other than hockey.
She's like, "Hey, you want to go out to dinner?" I'm like, can we go at 5:30 with the old birds?"
Yeah,
like, we're watching playoff hockey every night. It's ridiculous. I haven't done anything.
You just like zone in. My wife's like, go the final fucking nights. Let me watch fucking Bravo, will you?
Tonight we're doing like a fundraiser. Our friend Nina Ryan's running this fundraiser, and it's for like the preschool our kids go to and all this stuff. And so I'm like emceeing the auction part. There's like 6 items. It's like a live auction off. Try to get up the bids for these. One of them's actually a ride to school, like a police escort ride to school in the car, I think with the lights on maybe, or maybe not the lights on, but the kids sitting in the back of the car. I'm like, Wyatt'll be getting picked up here in that thing in 18 years too.
Hey, but, is this the fundraiser where like the guy chirped your shoes last year?
This is the fundraiser where the guy sent the picture on like Twitter or something and didn't say anything to me.
That was crazy.
That guy's there. He better come up and say something.
Are you going to do it
with
like
the 5 biggest state of the face? Slap.
Wait, you're going to do it like a Western cattle auction? Like 5, give me 5, give me 6, 6 over here, 7, give me 7, give me 8.
Pretty good, actually. Well, no, because I'm like, come on. I'm like calling out my buddies. I'm like, come on, get in there for this one.
All right. I feel like you were destined for that. Like with how fast you talk,
yeah, that
and
was
how like,
very
jittery
good.
You are. Like you were meant to be an
you're
auctioneer.
Like, you're like the Micro Machines guy a little bit.
Who's the Micro Machines?
Remember that guy? Remember the commercials, how fast he would talk?
Yeah. Oh,
I remember the Fed. Remember the FedEx guy with the mustache? He used to talk.
Maybe that was the same guy. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Sold to the deadbeat in the sex row.
Go collect the money. The reason I brought that up is because now I was thinking Toronto was going to lose. So I was like, oh, perfect. I can do that and then catch the Edmonton game. But now, like, I got to at least watch the third period of Florida-Toronto. So I don't know how I'm going to be. It could be an early exit. I got to watch hockey. It's my job.
Right here, buddy. Right here. Maybe your phone. I'll tell you. Take it everywhere.
I think it's worse to be at this thing going like this, watching the game on my phone as opposed to just leaving. Maybe you're right, though.
Just put it on the lectern in front of you so nobody will see it. Actually, what I just thought of a documentary. I haven't been watching a ton lately, obviously, with hockey, but I downloaded the Pamela Anderson one on Netflix. Really good documentary. She, produced it herself. And obviously, people produce their own documentaries. They could slant it their way, but she was so fucking vulnerable. She had all this awful stuff that happened to her as a kid. She's just like a really nice person who got fucking so railroaded. Like, people forget that fucking tape was in a safe in their house that got stolen. They stole a safe, took the
video. I've seen the show about it. There's a show on maybe FX or something. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's a good show.
And then it got to a point where she could have signed in, made money. And she's like, I don't care if they offer me $1 billion. Like, I wouldn't want it. You just get a totally different, like, impression of what you maybe had before of her. Just, you know, and a lot of empathy too. Like the girl went through a lot of shit. You really do, Mike. And she's just like a sweet Canadian. I mean, she's Canadian, of course. So obviously she's nice. She's just like a real sweet person. And then the kids, I mean, Pam Anderson and Tommy Lee, your parents, and these kids seem pretty fucking well adjusted considering all the craziness they grew up with. But yeah, it's definitely worth the watch. You'll definitely look at Pam Anderson in a different way than you did beforehand. So
yeah, the other I hope so.
That and Apocalypto. I want a book report on Monday, Whit.
All right, guys. All right, gang. This was a pleasure. Yeah, old school feel.
Old school, absolutely.
And we'll be back to you guys on, what is it, Tuesday morning?
Tuesday
morning.
All right. Meow.